Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're talking about a great new book, The Iodine Crisis. We're speaking to the author, investigative journalist and researcher and patient advocate, Lynn Farrow. Lynn is the director of Breast Cancer Choices, which is a nonprofit dedicated to looking at evidence-based ways to treat breast cancer. But she also has developed a very, very specific interest in iodine. She's written a great book which talks about the iodine crisis, how lots of us are not getting enough iodine. We talked about that in part one of our podcast. We're going to talk a little bit more about how to test now for iodine deficiency. We've identified previously some of the symptoms of iodine deficiency. As you may hear in the background, we are broadcasting from New York City, where there are frequent sirens, alarms, and disasters. But we pay that no heed. Lynn, you're not too far away from New York City, are you?
No, I'm out on Long Island.
Okay, well, it's nice and quiet, but you know about New York City. All right,
yes.
So pay those sirens no mind. There's nothing. It's every, you know, nothing to look at. Move along. So when it comes to testing for iodine deficiency, you identified in part one some of the symptoms that we might expect. The symptoms are legion because iodine affects so many organs. It affects the thyroid, it affects the brain, it affects the immune system, it affects the breasts, of course, in women. It may affect the uterus and contribute to incidence of fibroids. Many organ systems, the skin, of course. How do you determine if you're low in iodine?
Well, the gold standard is the iodine loading test, in which you're given 50 milligrams of iodine, and then you collect the 24 hours of urine and send it to the lab, and they will try to figure out what range you fall in.
And we do that test. That's a test that we do at the Hoffman Center. But I have to say, sometimes it's the smoking gun. It really gives us the heads up, and sometimes the results are, you know, it's like a little equivocal. In my opinion, not a perfect test for determining if you have iodine deficiency.
Well, one of the things we found, this is the patient-to-patient movement discovered this. People that had done three tests found that some people that are more deficient will spill the 90% or almost all of the 50 milligrams that you're given at the onset of the test. It will go because there's no symporters developed in the body, or they're oxidized, or they're just not working. That will just go right
to natural, the body's natural iodine transporters. In other words, the ability to pick up and utilize the iodine and bring it to the tissues where it's needed by the body.
So if they're sort of sleeping or undeveloped, or for congenital reasons, we don't know, if they're not there or not working, you'll get a false negative on the iodine test.
Okay.
So if a person seems to be iodine deficient clinically and you give them another test after 3 months to 6 months of iodine, you might get a lower value. It won't be equivocal. It'll be significantly lower. That means the symporters are absorbing the iodine.
Okay.
The third test should be much more, then it should go up again and get near the normal range.
Okay, so that's really inside baseball for doctors and really savvy patients to discuss when they're working out their iodine protocol. This information that I think is new, and it's in your book, and it'll help patients arrive at a better conclusion about where they're at in their iodine therapy. Now, one of the tricky things about iodine is that its use is controversial. If you ask conventional doctors about iodine therapy, and including thyroid specialists, they'll say, no, we know that iodine is beneficial for the thyroid. You need some iodine. But too much iodine is actually bad for the thyroid. The thyroid can go haywire. It can go into overdrive. You can develop a thyroid storm with too much iodine. Or conversely, if you take too much thyroid over time, you shut off your thyroid. You can actually destroy or damage your thyroid with too much iodine. So which is it? Too much? Does it flare the thyroid? Or, what's the deal on that?
That's a great question. That particular information, the suggestion that iodine will shut down the thyroid or aggravate it, comes from a paper written by Wolf Chaikoff in 1948 and 1961. That's the the theme that got two generations of people that went to medical school to think that iodine was a poison. That has been disproved. It wasn't even proved at the time, but and it wasn't replicated, that study. But that, as you said, that notion is around the, around that if you take iodine in milligram doses, you will shut down the thyroid. That hasn't proved to be true at all. There's one, and Dr. Brownstein will talk about this, one contraindication, and that is if you have a hot nodule that's producing thyroid hormones, then you don't take iodine. But I don't think there's anyone walking around with a hot nodule that doesn't know it.
Well, that would be revealed by, you know, thyroid testing, a thyroid scan. Yes. Generally, if you're having your thyroid worked up for a thyroid mass.
It's exceedingly rare.
Mm-hmm.
It's exceedingly rare.
Okay. So, so that would be where the thyroid would be set off like a bomb by excess iodine. What about and you say the reverse, that's the Wolff-Chaikoff theory, that's something that we learned about in medical school and we took it for granted that this is settled science, that too much iodine suppresses the thyroid.
Yes, and that's one of the things that disturbed me most. I don't know that anybody but a physician who was subject to scuttlebutt as in terms of medical policy and finds out that it's not true would really understand it. But if somebody publishes a paper and it's inaccurate and it influences generations of people who can have the ability to change people's lives, this is very, very serious. And one of the things that the patient-to-patient iodine movement has shown is that it just completely disproved it.
So that patients, are not coming to harm from taking thyroid, and there's a lot of patients who've been doing this, especially with proper supervision from their doctors, and B, a lot of symptoms are getting better when patients are taking thyroid medication. So what are some of you actually have some testimonials and reports in your book, and of course there are websites that talk about this. What are people seeing when they take thyroid, iodine, rather?
Well, one of the interesting things to me, and this would probably happen to you in your practice, and you may have noticed this, people will take iodine for one thing. Like I would come in contact with people who were taking it for breast cancer. That was the initial thing. And I get an email saying, is this supposed to affect psoriasis? Because I've had psoriasis since I was 13, and now I don't have it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Or have genital herpes, and they'll say, gee, you know, if I take 50 milligrams of iodorol, I can keep the herpes breakouts down.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I don't know. You know, the reports were just coming in at people using iodine at the 50 milligram dosage. So the breast cancer patients were the canaries in the mine originally, but in a reverse sense, they began coming up with things, you know, like getting rid of the allergies, that kind of thing. And we just really don't know how it's affecting some of these, like fibromyalgia. People will take it for their thyroid or something else, and the fibromyalgia, you know, the aches and pains seem to go away.
Where I've seen it work is, and it's remarkably so, in some patients where thyroid medication helps them lose a little weight, maybe, but then they get stuck at a weight plateau, they begin taking iodine, and somehow their metabolism kicks into high gear. It's quite interesting when that happens. People lose substantial amounts of weight.
Yes, that happened to me. I wasn't tremendously overweight, but I, you know, was like starving myself to try to be at a normal weight, and really didn't work. And then it just sort of gradually I became a normal weight. So I guess that was my thyroid working, because there were so many other things that didn't seem to be thyroid to me, seemed to be neurological and other things. That. But clearly the weight and the first thing, you know, not feeling cold after years and years of feeling cold, that was certainly
an indication. It's suggesting that you're getting better energy burn-off in your cells due to the effects of iodine. Unclear whether it was at a cellular level or in your thyroid, somehow that seemed to help your metabolism.
Yes, it absolutely helped mine. I didn't even know what a good metabolism was. I had been so sluggish for so long, I didn't know. And then when I took that 50 milligrams the first day of the test, and I woke up and that I had to back off because it was too much to after a couple of days at 50 milligrams. But I really didn't know what it was like to feel good. And I get emails from people all the time because they know I've written a book or they're, you know, that I'm interested. And I collect these different stories. And one of them is that mental alertness. They'll say, I'll never go back. Now that I know what it's like to be alert, this is what other people must be like.
Fascinating. I've also noticed that in some of my patients who have chronic infections, like chronic skin infections, I have some patients who have antibiotic-resistant staph infections of the skin, the so-called MRSA, methicillin-resistant staph, where when we give them iodine, their skin improves. It's almost like giving them an internal, like when you're a kid and you scraped your knee, they put iodine on it to prevent the infection. Taking it internally seems to have a good effect on infections. And in patients who have chronic bronchitis or who have bronchiectasis with little pockets in their lungs where pus accumulates and causes infections, and these are patients who may require being on antibiotics virtually all the time, iodine actually helps. Chronic sinusitis often responds to iodine administration because it seems to act as a natural internal antibiotic.
Mm-hmm. That's great to hear. I hadn't heard anything about MRSA, but that would certainly make sense because one of the reasons people think like iodine will not kill off, you know, good intestinal flora, and people say, well, why is that? We don't really know why, but if iodine evolved from algae, which was the first antioxidant, and if it goes back so long, there may be some evolutionary reason that it doesn't kill off the good things and it just gets rid of the bad things.
I think it's just as there are many natural antibiotics, so-called things like oregano, for example, or olive leaf extract. These have sort of antimicrobial effects. They don't kill off everything, but they sort of suppress the overgrowth, keeping the overgrowth down. It's sort of like something that inhibits but doesn't destroy everything.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't exactly know. Perhaps it enhances the killing power of some of the white blood cells. But, you know, coming back to the way that you use iodine. Now, one of the problems that happens when people start taking iodine, sometimes it's not easy. Sometimes they feel lousy and they come back and they say, I'm allergic to the iodine, or I can't tolerate the iodine, or it must be bad for me because when I started taking it, it just, you know, all hell broke loose. I started feeling lousy. So talk to us about that and the proper way of, you know, beginning or the induction phase of iodine therapy.
Well, there's some iodine practitioners that try to get people to take selenium and salt water for a couple of weeks and vitamin C and the companion nutrients. We call them the companion nutrients because you're supposed to take those with iodine in order to get the best effect, get it into the cell and get the crud out of the cell. But what people get when they take too much iodine too fast is they get a detox reaction. Just like we were talking about killing off bacteria, iodine will displace bromide because it competes with that. We talked about that they're both halogens and they compete on the same level. So it will knock the poison, say, from the fire retardants and the pesticides off the receptors, and it will go right into your bloodstream. You'll feel terrible. So, or you might feel a little druggy, you know, like a little sedated because mm-hmm. bromide in the 50s was used as a sedative too. So the thing is, or your nose will run, the thing is to start slower. That's what they've gotten the most effects. Even some people will say, no, I can't take one drop of Lugol's. Well, dilute it by 10 and put it on your heel and build up, you know, one drop
externally,
a day.
Externally, putting it on externally, it will actually be absorbed through your skin.
Yes.
Okay.
And because some people are just very toxic, and when that toxin moves, that's what they're blaming on the iodine. That's not an iodine allergy. It's the antidote to bromide kicking it out of the body, and it's going kicking and screaming.
So your suggestion is that if people begin taking it at a low dose with companion nutrients, as you suggest in the book and as according to protocols of certain doctors who are iodine practitioners, that this will ameliorate the symptoms or the symptoms will pass, and then you'll emerge into a phase where you'll be taking higher doses of iodine and just feel better and better continuously.
Yes. What happens is your body begins to get rid of the bromide and stops being as reactive, and gradually you build up until you feel good. But as soon as you start feeling bad, first of all, you should be taking the salt water to escort the bromide out of the body through the kidneys and in the urine. As soon as you feel that, you stop. And what we call that is pulse dosing. So you stop for at least 48 hours and then restart a little lower, mm-hmm. and then build up and then stop. As soon as you start feeling the slightest bit off again, stop for the 48 hours. And the pulse dosing has been one of the most effective things because it gives the liver and kidneys a chance to clear. So if people say they're allergic or they're sick, this doesn't happen to everybody, and some people get worried if they don't have any detox reactions. They think they must not be getting any effect.
But by the way, a lot of this information is available at iodineresearch.com, and so there's information for the beginner looking for the iodine protocol. That website really is a wealth of information. And also, FAQs, frequently asked questions, they're in the book and they're on the website as well.
Yes, breastcancerchoices.org/IProtocol will have also the complete protocol, anything you would really want to know, really a beginner's guide to what we've just been talking about.
Okay, now what about the form of iodine? Because form is important. You mentioned Lugol's solution. That's a very old-fashioned source of iodine that doctors have been using since probably the 1940s or even earlier.
Actually, it was invented 185 years ago.
Oh, goodness gracious, okay.
By a French doctor, Dr. Jean Lugol.
Oh.
And it was never patented or anything. It's very simple. And every pharmacy stocked it, veterinarians stocked it, and it just sort of went out of favor. And then a few years ago, the DEA, not the FDA, the DEA found out that some speed manufacturers, methamphetamine manufacturers, were using it for something or other. And so they controlled the amount you can buy. But nevertheless, if you go on Amazon.com, there are many reputable Lugol solution sellers. J. Crow has been around for years. That's the one. That's where I get my Lugol solution. And you're going to be getting stuff that they have a reputation to maintain.
Right.
It's also available in Iodoral.
Right, which is what I use with my patients. It's called Iodoral, like Iodoral or Iodoral.
Yes, that's the most convenient. That's what I use now, too, most of the time. Because it's just so convenient. You know exactly how much you're getting, and it's a reliable company, and it's just easy to carry around if you take it a couple of times a day.
So in your book, you distinguish between some of the commercially available forms of iodine, like betadine. That's iodine, right? Good, bad?
Yes, but it has ingredients in it you don't want. And the thing is, there are other things, that atomidine, magnesium, iodine. There's just various bells and whistles people have put on iodine. But in order to really maintain a knowledge of exactly and what you're taking in measurement, using the Lugol's formula, which is in Iodoral, it seems to be the most widely established and accepted way of taking it.
What about, some people say, well, I don't want to take that stuff. That sounds really chemicalized, synthetic. I want to just eat a lot of natural seaweed. So they'll have a lot of wakame, and they'll have a lot of, or they might get kelp drops, from the health food store. Is that going to deliver iodine in a form that's beneficial for the body in the correct dose?
You're not going to get enough iodine to displace bromide in those things. But even more importantly, though, you don't know where that kelp is coming from. It can be contaminated with all sorts of oil spill dispersants, pesticides, fire retardants, Roundup runoff from people's lawns, gets in the ocean, they gets into the seaweed. Seaweed is great at absorbing iodine, but it's also great for absorbing Roundup and other stuff. Seaweed is also used, if there's an oil spill or a contaminant spill, they throw seaweed on it because it will suck it right up. So you don't want to be taking anything that has to do with seaweed right now, especially in radiation. The Fukushima thing is on top of that.
Hmm. Okay, so seaweed is part of the. It's a staple in the Japanese diet, and you're saying that that may not be so advantageous.
It isn't now. I think when it was studied, that was probably mostly before the. We had most of the contamination from the fire retardants. If you have it for once a week or twice a week or something like that, it probably won't hurt you and you might get some nutrients. It's the people that are using it as a supplement every day that can get into trouble. And people have ended up in the emergency room with arsenic poisoning because they got the wrong kind of kelp tablet. We want as many food-based nutrients as we can and eat as much whole foods as we can, as you always recommend. But in this case, you have to go for something pure because you can't protect the ocean from contaminants.
So the book, The Iodine Crisis, lays it all out in a beautiful, detailed fashion, from the history of iodine to the ailments that iodine deficiency can cause to what's happening in our modern chemical-laden environment that is causing us to be more iodine-challenged. And also, there's some inspiring stories of people turning things around with proper iodine therapy. My caveat is that iodine therapy can be a little tricky, and try to do so with at least some good peer supervision, if not supervision from a health professional who's iodine-literate, because... there's some ins and outs where you may want to get some guidance.
Yes. Our motto is start low, start slow. So that then you have the least chance of getting into any bromide toxicity situation. And you don't want people quitting because they think they're allergic to iodine when, in fact, they're just having a little detox reaction that could be fixed.
Right. They might, feel... like confused and abandon a possible source of relief of their symptoms prematurely because they're simply running into a little turbulence. Doesn't necessarily mean that iodine is not for them.
Yes. There's an iodine workshop group on Facebook that has a lot of peer-to-peer participation and has new people and people that have been using it for years. That has helped a lot of people. They'll just run into a snag or they'll ask how much, when do you take it, that kind of thing. And it's based on the findings of the 2007 iodine conference that Dr. Brownstein and Dr. Abraham and Dr. Fleshes led very bravely and changed history in terms of, and changed a lot of people's lives.
Well, great. That's on Facebook and just look it up. The book is The Iodine Crisis, What You Don't Know About Iodine Can Wreck Your Life. The author, Lynn Farrow. Once again, give out your website, Lynn.
My website is breastcancerchoices.org is one, and my home website, my private website, is lynnfarrow.net. And I also edit a website called iodineresearch.com. That's basically a collection of research articles. But for the general person starting out, iodineresearch.com would be a good place to look.
Well, I want to thank you very much. We covered a lot of ground in this podcast. It's very thought-provoking, and we're shedding light on an important issue, an important pathway to relief of symptoms, and in some cases, a life-saving procedure because of its impact on a potentially life-threatening disease, breast cancer.
Yes.
Thanks very much for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Oh, go ahead.
I was saying thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you, Lynn Farrow. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.